Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. We've had a busy weekend, haven't we?
Fresh back from Malvern.
Indeed, our first event of the year, and what a stunner of an event it was.
Oh man, it was awesome.
If we do say so ourselves.
Yeah, I was like bigging ourselves up straight away. The house on the back.
The sun was out, the sky was blue, Land Rovers as far as the eye could see. It was beautiful.
Yeah, really enjoyed this one. Long time in the planning, really, because regular listeners will know, and readers of the magazine will know, that we've planned in an additional hall, and it was called the Restoration Hall.
Indeed.
We didn't really know what it was going to end up like until the day, because we've got some club vehicles, and we've gone off piste a little bit with some tractors and classic minis.
It's essentially giving you more for your money. So you pay to get in. The majority of people are still there for, you know, to buy stuff for their Land Rovers and other vehicles. But we thought, what can we do to give back a little bit? So
that's what we did.
We did. And it worked really well.
What was interesting, so a couple of the tractor clubs were there and they were really surprised how many new members they'd attracted from the Land Rover audience.
Really?
Yeah. So there's quite a few people own tractors, aren't there?
Good to, I mean, Richard Chassis, for instance, do some of the tractor shows, don't they? So it proves that the crossover must be there.
Because that's right. Yeah, because they said,
was it Newark, wasn't it?
Yeah, Newark Tractor Show, because they're selling chassis to Land Rover to tractor people who have got a Land Rover that's possibly a bit rotten.
Yeah,
and want to keep hold of it.
There you go.
So there you go. Yeah,
but no, it's cracking. We had our friends at Boom Racing next to us, didn't we, with the 10th scale. Radio-controlled Land Rovers on display.
That was the first time I'd got up close to one of those, and I am so impressed with the skill the time and effort that goes into them. Pete, wasn't it? The main man there.
Yes.
He showed me under the bonnet of one of them, and there was a scaled-down engine. Even the reservoir for the brake reservoir had some fluid in it.
It's crazy.
Like minute scale. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like really impressive.
The work and effort that goes into them is just fantastic. And they're not scared to drive them either.
They're driving them around. The floor, yeah. Really good.
Kids and adults all thoroughly enjoying them. And they are, like, did you see the Camel Trophy 110 with all the weathering in the dirt side? Oh.
I couldn't actually work out. So I looked at it really, really closely. And I was trying to work out if it was real dirt or not.
Yeah.
Was it real dirt?
No, it's weathering effect, but it looks like the layers of it and everything, it looks just absolutely amazing.
So I didn't realise how many hours it takes to build them.
Yeah. Like, building the chassis is one thing, but weathering all the body and making it look, giving it character rather than just painting it one colour type of thing is mad.
Yeah.
So
I don't think I have the skill to do it.
No, certainly something you learn, isn't it? But
yeah.
Lots of people buying and selling.
Loads of good stuff.
It's a really, really good turnout, more so than this time last year, I think.
Do you know in percentage terms how much busier it was than last year?
No, but from being there, it was noticeably busier.
35%.
Was it really?
35% more people came through the gates this year than last year.
Fantastic.
Or, you know, February based on February last year. Really good.
Which might have been reflected slightly in the parking. So if you had to wait to get parked up, we are sorry, but there was a big turnout.
Well, the thing being is everyone turned up at once.
Yeah.
So there's a flow of traffic. But anyway, moving on, I have made more purchases.
Have you?
Yeah.
Go on. I'm listening.
Again, my wife still hasn't heard.
I actually sold some stuff at Malvern rather than buying it. But anyway.
Hey, sorry. I gave you some old stuff to sell, but you gave it away.
I didn't give it away.
That's how worthless it was.
In credit, yeah. I mean, it was one slightly rotten inner wheel arch. So, yeah, I don't think anyone would have been trying to hunt you down and shake your hand for it. But
yeah, so, you know, I mentioned my project. I was trying to get all the bits together. So the near side front galvanised original wheel arch over the, up the top was completely holed. So I saw some sort of rust and I poked holes all the way along. And so I was on a hunt for another one of those. But in fact, I have got some already galvanised coming my way.
Okay.
Picking them up next weekend.
Did you get them from Malvern or is this elsewhere?
Yes, the trader does come to Malvern. He comes to all of our spares days.
Oh, okay.
So he basically buys them all secondhand, gets them re-galvanised. And So I'm kind of, the deal is, so I give him my bumper, my sills, my inner arches, and my cappings off my rear tub in part exchange for some freshly galvanised ones.
That is a great
idea. It's a more efficient way of doing it.
Saves loads of time.
Yeah, because I have to go all the way to the galvanisers, which incidentally, I don't know if you've ever had anything galvanised, but they do it by, I think it's done by weight, but a minimum order.
Okay.
So immediately it's 150 quid. Plus you have to get it shot blasted, but in a certain way so they like it.
Right.
It's like a load of hassle. Might as well give it to the people who know.
Yeah, I mean, if he runs that as sort of a part of his business, then he's going to be doing that all the time. He'll have a great relationship with the galvanizers, and that works out better for you because you haven't got to faff around transporting it around.
There, but I'm going to go to get it blasted, come back, go to the galvanizers to drop it off.
Yeah.
All that 4 or 5 days later, go and pick it up again. And the galvanizer is not exactly in the local town, so it's a
bit of a
time is money, as they say.
Yeah.
I'm going to part exchange them against his stuff.
You're going to get all the stuff, all of it in one go, are you?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like a good idea.
It's just easy.
Yeah.
And, incidentally, do you notice, my bosses might be listening to this, or our bosses, shall we say, but I hired a slightly bigger van than I needed.
Yeah, because I helped you lift something into it, didn't I? And I thought to myself, I've been stung by this, I've made this mistake myself before, where I've gone to fit this certain part of Land Rover in a van and the van hasn't been big enough, but our van was certainly big enough.
Yeah. So how does a massive, like, long wheelbase Ford Transit van, and the front half was all the exhibition stuff, back half was my Defender rear tub.
A convenient space for your rear tub.
Yeah. I just realised, like, how hanging my rear tub was, so I've gone on and used the YRM repair panels, haven't I?
Yes.
And I've done the floor and the under body support struts,
yeah,
etc., etc. And in stock, I had a pair of Britpart outer wings,
the side panels, aren't
side
they?
Panels,
yeah,
and the rear panels,
right.
And it's kind of come away from the wheel arch boxes; it's all a bit loose.
Okay,
where they spot welds, the original spot welds are broken. I'm giving it to Phoenix Automotive, who, AKA Defender rear tubs.
Ah, right, okay.
Yep. And because their unit is just up the road from Malvern.
Right.
And they're going to rebuild it.
Nice.
So we're going to feature it in the magazine.
I was going to say, can we expect to see this content somewhere, Steve?
It will be in the magazine, and I will do some YouTube as well. But that's all in good time. He's a very busy man. So he's going to fit it in sometime in March. So the rear tub, because let's be honest, right? If we were to put the panels, it can be done at home.
Yeah.
And you bond them on. But if you bond them on slightly wrong,
mm.
you're in a bit of a mess. You won't get those panels. And the panels are too expensive to get wrong.
Yeah, I know. I get that. Oh, that single, I don't know what you'd call it, like the light panel where the lights fit in, the rear quarter.
Like the end quarter panel.
Yeah. I replaced one of them on the new tub that I bought for the Series 3. And I found that I was painstakingly measuring, remeasuring, bracing everything with ratchet straps. And I still managed to get it slightly wonky. So
yeah.
Taking it to the professionals, I think, for that amount of work is probably the right thing to do.
Because you've got to essentially drill out spot welds for the outer panels. So I've got the actual wing panels as well as the end panels. Can you imagine how out of sorts that's going to get if you don't know what you're doing?
Yeah. We did. I've been involved in replacing one side panel and one rear panel on a tub before, but the tub was still bolted onto the Land Rover, so it kept everything fairly square.
Okay.
But even that was a painstaking and nail-biting job because you just don't know how things are going to settle.
And I definitely know I don't have the skill for that. So,
fair enough.
And I want, basically, as we've discussed, right, the project, replacing some of those panels and repairing them is absolutely perfect. But I want to take it on a level now.
Yeah.
I want to make it as good as new, really.
I think you've made the right choice, especially as, like you say, as we said before, you bought a bulkhead, you're going to get wings, things like that. It will look really, really nice everywhere else. The doors are new. If you had like the tub let it down, it would be a shame, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So you're not going to have that problem now.
And by the time this project's moving on, right, there's no, I told you, 2025 is the year.
In last week's podcast, I'd like to bring to your attention, in last week's podcast that I did with Neil Watterson, who obviously I used to work with and still comes and helps, we help each other out on that. I was bigging you up big time about how much you've pushed this project forward.
I haven't even listened to it. Oh, no, it's not out yet.
No, it's not out.
Because you recorded Rob and Neil without me.
Yeah.
Without...
This is out. It is out now.
Oh, it is out now, but not out now in terms of when we're recording this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Everyone knows we're not recording this the day it comes out.
No. So they go out at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm not getting that up that early for anyone.
No. There's only one 6 o'clock in my day, and that is home time. But, yeah, so, oh, no, I'll have to listen to that then.
Yeah.
So I'm not like you to pass any compliments my way.
Well, as you normally, like, I think it's fair game to rib you if you're sat here, because you can give it back. But yeah. if you're not there as to avenge yourself, then I'm not going to go poking fun at you.
Well, you should hear what I say about you behind your back.
Well, that's because I'm a better person than you, Spiff.
That's not hard, is it?
Moving on, should we have...
Oh, wait, for 2 days from now, then, when this has gone out, we'll be putting my engine and gearbox in.
We will. That's true. Yeah, yeah, 100%. You've found all the bolts, haven't you? You've got your little tape measure out. You've measured them all up, cross-referenced them with the parts diagram. You know exactly where everything goes.
Do you know what I was really surprised at? Well, you're making that sound really like... Well, I was really surprised. It's something I haven't looked at for 4 years. I opened the box and there was all nuts, bolts, washers, goodness knows what else. And it's surprising how much I remembered what I've got and where it goes.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think...
I don't even know what I had for dinner yesterday, let alone what was in a box 4 years ago.
But that goes to show if you... I know some of the stuff was stored better than others, but if you do keep sections of fixings together, it does become kind of like it comes back to you, but also it's easier to decipher where they go if you keep them in groups rather than taking...
Definitely all in groups.
Every single nut and bolt and chucking them all in a box. Which never works out well for anyone.
No, it doesn't, no.
Which got me thinking, actually. Obviously, we do share technical advice in the magazine, on the podcast a little bit, on YouTube. What are the best sort of tech tips that you've learned over the years? I've got a few of my own, which I'll start to share as you think of some that you've obviously prepared for.
Oh, yeah, I'm properly prepared for the podcast. But a huge list.
Obviously, one of the first ones is what we've just spoken about, is when you take something apart, even if it's a small thing, keep all the fixings, the nuts and bolts in little pots or in bags or whatever, because then when it comes to put it back together, even if it's 4 years later, like it is in your case, you've got a much better idea of where everything goes.
I do have one, and this is a real oversight on my heart, on my behalf. One that I've mentioned on the YouTube video we did was I labelled up wiring with paper, like... price tags you'd put on. You see these price tags in an antique shop, right? You know, those tiny little ones.
They're like tags you put on your suitcase when you go on holiday, but smaller.
Yeah, they're tiny, tiny ones, yeah. And I'd written on there what the wire, where it went.
Yeah.
But in time, the ink has kind of like dissolved or disappeared.
Right. So now they say absolutely nothing.
They're blank. So, yeah, that was oversight. So I would absolutely say, if you don't understand wiring, and I do not, is to... probably get somebody that knows and understands wiring to take it to pieces, to be honest.
Yeah. Otherwise, if you...
Or label it properly.
Yeah, insulation tape folded back on itself with permanent marker should last better than, like, paper tag. Are they paper tags?
Yeah.
Either way, that they didn't...
But I didn't really know, yeah.
It was covered over, but it...
The damp atmosphere's taken the ink out of the page.
The moisture's got to it and off it's gone.
Yeah.
So...
But anyway, it'd be a lot easier just to replace the loom because it's old.
I think that it will be the way forward, again, in keeping with doing everything to a much higher standard than perhaps you would if you were just doing a re-chassis like we did on mine.
Yeah.
A new loom would be the way forward.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's good. It's good. I think, you know, going quickly back to the spares days that we hold, and this is not an advert as per se to say you must come to a spares day, but do you know, it's not about the parts half the time. It's about the people you meet.
Absolutely.
Because we met so many good people, and if you could gather up all the knowledge at that showground, all the people who restore Land Rovers, collect them, looking for elusive parts, the place is an absolute gold mine, and that everyone's, most people are friendly. Well, you get the odd grumpy one, don't you?
Yeah, you definitely do.
You know.
But yeah, 100%. I was lucky enough to, once we'd, because people perhaps don't realise quite how hands-on we are with these events. We do
put on, everything.
We wear various hats throughout the day, don't we? From car parking, marshalling, taking gate, money on the
emptying
gate.
Emptying rubbish bins.
Emptying the bins at the end.
Yeah.
This is, we're fully invested in it. But I did have the rather privileged position of being able to hang around mostly on our stand for the day. Once the, between the hours of 9 and 2, which is when the, or half 9 and 2, which is
yeah, when the public are there, yeah.
And our good colleague Lucy was on hand to supply people with subscriptions and free hats, which was the deal we had on at the app on the day. Sign up,
yeah,
free hat. But I met so many lovely people who came up and said, "Oh, I've been listening to you on the way here," and I thought, "Oh God."
Yeah, I met 2 or 3, to be honest.
Did you?
Somebody, he may listen. I didn't catch his name, so apologies. But on the gate, because I've just been listening to you on the way here. I was like, "What?" It's just so bizarre.
It is odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah. Living the dream.
Living the dream. But no, lots of lovely people around, lots of good conversation, lots of questions asked. I asked questions. We looked around my Series 3, its first proper public appearance, I suppose, since we finished rechassising it.
That's quite a commitment, though, driving that all the way now, I felt, over something that you've not long put back together.
That's trial by fire, isn't it?
It went well.
It was fine, yeah. I had a couple of small things to iron out, but nothing, you know, it made it there and back. It wasn't
perfect, yeah.
Didn't throw up any problems. So, yeah, really, really pleased with it. And lots of nice feedback, people saying, oh, it's turned out really nicely. And, yeah, that was nice.
Have you ever worked out what that does to the gallon?
No.
And that's not a question you ask someone who drives a V8, really, because if you go on...
I don't think I'd drive it much if I did know.
Yeah. I always do a quick check I do on my cars.
Maybe I should. But, no, I've never worked it out. I would have thought probably about 15 to the gallon.
Yeah.
Maybe. 50,
so about 50 pence a mile then.
Yeah.
That's not bad for a V8 though, is it?
Well, the thing is, it's not like I drive it every day, do you know what I mean? So when I do drive it, I really enjoy it and I don't mind. It's like, it's a recreational thing, isn't it? Like if I bought a series Land Rover to drive every day, it would have a TDI, it wouldn't have a V8.
No, I get you.
But yeah. The fact that it is a V8 makes it that much more special when you do drive. Mm. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I don't begrudge its terrible fuel economy. But
so anyway, back to the top tips then. You were saying you had some ideas.
Yeah, so I've got a friend who's got a Discovery 4 and they texted me the other day. I hadn't spoke to them for years and they sent me a message and said, I've not long had this Discovery 4. I took it in for service. It was all fine, but I want to check... Basically, they were asking how they check the oil level because they don't have a dipstick, Discovery 4.
Of course.
They don't have a conventional dipstick. Yeah. And he said, I looked in the owner's manual and I have to go in the menu and check it, but it wouldn't come up. And basically, if you've driven it and then you stop it, you have to wait a certain amount of time before it will show the oil level.
Of course, it's got time to settle in the sump, hasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. But say if you've changed the oil yourself and you want to quickly just see where the level is to see if you need to add more or, you know, for whatever other reason you want to check your oil level when you have driven, if you open the bonnet first, if the bonnet's open, what you do is you go into the menu and it will say not available. If you hit cruise control button twice, it will then show you the oil level straight away. If the bonnet is shut, you have to wait. If the bonnet's open, you don't.
Interesting.
Yeah, I still can't quite get my head around why they wouldn't just have a conventional dipstick on it as well, even though it's got the oil level sensor in the sump. Why would you get rid of a conventional dipstick?
It is annoying. Cars will do that. Because when they've got those little markers, what does one mark represent?
Yeah.
And how much oil is it till the next mark comes on? So you could still be overfull.
And the sensor can pack up.
Yeah.
Have you ever known a dipstick? I mean, they might well.
I've known a few dipsticks in the time.
Have you ever known one break, though, or become inoperable? Have you ever known a sensor that's submerged in oil?
Somebody the other day was talking to me about their dipstick was broken. And I can't think who it was. But someone said it hasn't got a dipstick because it's broken.
Oh.
So how do you check the oil? We don't, was their answer.
Yeah, it's very, very odd. But that's the first one that came to mind. The second one that I did think, which is a really, really quick, easy fix, is if you've got a Land Rover with electric windows, not a Defender, but like a Freelander 2 or a Discovery or anything of that sort of era, quite often, if you disconnect the battery, the one touch on the windows will stop working. So, you know, when you jab a button, it goes all the way down and then you pull it and it goes all the way up. That will sometimes pack up, and you know, people don't always make the connection between the battery being disconnected and that occurring.
Well, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Same with, actually, same with P38, where it says window not set, and he goes doot doot doot.
I hate that noise.
Like, it lives in my mind.
I couldn't have a P38 just because of that noise.
Sunroof not set. Doot doot. Driver's side window's not set. Doot doot doot. But anyway.
Yeah, that noise.
You basically put the window all the way down, hold the switch down. It will make a little clicky noise.
What's like a doot?
It won't go doot doot doot. All the way to the top, hold the window switch up again, and it will reset.
It calibrates
the position.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's quite a handy one to know. What else is there? There's plenty of little hints and tricks you sort of pick up. Hard battery reset is a good one. It's one of those that some people sort of we use it as a sort of fix-all for everything. It isn't a fix-all for everything, but it does cure quite a few things. If the vehicle's been sat and the battery's gone dead, or you've had multiple electrical problems, or a module has gone down and you've replaced the module with a used one or whatever. Essentially, what a hard battery reset is you join, again, on a vehicle that has electronics, not like an old Defender or whatever, but Range Rover Sport, L322, whatever, undoing the two terminals, the two battery leads off the battery, and either cable tying them together or putting them together for a certain length of time. Half an hour normally does it. Basically, it doesn't reset the modules, but it empties all the capacitors and all the
batteries. Was it empty? Yeah, it must be sort of doing something.
And it works on things like amplifiers on like the Harman Kardon amps on things like Range Rover Sports and Discovery 3 and 4, things like that. Sometimes they'll just stop working for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
Okay.
And they're not a cheap part to replace, but sometimes they just need a hard battery reset, and alas, it will come back to life.
I reckon, so diagnostics tools you can buy.
Yeah.
With these modern Land Rovers, you can't replace a battery, can you, without telling it's got a new battery?
No, not if it has battery monitoring on it or smart charging.
Smart charging, because the alternator is used to charging the old battery.
Yeah.
Can overcharge the new battery, is that correct?
Yeah, there's...
So you need to tell the ECU that you've changed the battery for a new one.
It learns all the voltage and the how many amps the new battery has and things like that, so it knows how to behave. It charges it accordingly rather than, like you say, pumping loads and loads into the new one like it did the old one.
Is there a sequence? Like modern cars learn how you drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they just get used to the way you drive. Is there a way of resetting modern Land Rovers?
Yes.
Because I had a Mini Cooper S once, supercharged one.
I had one of them years
ago. Yeah, really, really good thing. And very, very quickly learned how you drive. And I used to do a lot of long runs.
Right.
Like, properly, like, we're talking like 50 miles each way down the A1. And that car was like... really supposed to be driven hard around corners and, driven properly. Back brake, B-brake. Spirited driving on B-brake. So I learned the sequence. I can't remember what it was. Ignition on, press this, do this. And then it would reset. And then you drive it like you've stolen it for a bit. And it was like a completely different car again.
Wow.
Came like noticeably different.
I know this. I don't know it off the top of my head, but there's a gearbox adaption resets you can do on things like Freelander 2 and Evoque, which basically clear the gearbox's memory, and then it relearns how, like, it starts afresh, if you know what I mean.
Aye.
So if you've just bought one and it's the previous owner's used it for loads of really, really short journeys, the gearbox probably isn't going to behave as you might want it to if you're doing longer runs or like lots of hills. Obviously, we're talking automatic gearboxes here, not manuals.
Perhaps I should have learned that when I had my Freelander 2.
Possibly, yeah.
It might have been the problem.
No, yeah, I don't know. Again, things like hard battery reset are all often used as a sort of plaster to kind of try and fix faults, which there probably is like an actual hard fault, but they'll say, oh, try that anyway, you've got nothing to lose. Obviously, you disconnect the battery before you pull the terminals together. You completely disconnect the battery.
You don't want a firework display.
No, because that would be very bad.
Talking of Freelander series, we were asked the other day, somebody that my wife knows really well and has worked with for a number of years. Freelander 2.
Oh, yeah.
2007 with 160,000 miles on the clock.
A fine vintage.
Yeah. Loves it. It's called Mandy Delandy.
Right.
And she absolutely loves this thing. She was stuck with a bit of a quandary the other day. She had this banging noise from underneath and didn't sound great. So she took it to a local garage. And she'd not long had, but the MOT was carried out 3 months ago. Four new tyres in recent weeks. It's had new clutch about 20,000 miles ago.
Okay.
And it had had, what else? It had a clutch, the tyres.
So that's some money spent on it, was it?
Oh, new radiator. That was the other thing. New radiator.
Right.
Took it to the garage and the rear subframe, near side rear subframe, had corroded.
Yeah.
And it was all moving around. And it was going to cost about £700.
Right.
So the question was, is it the end of the road for Mandy or should she spend £700? We gave us our advice.
We were balanced, weren't we?
Yeah.
Because, again, if it was like a car that you just bought and it needed a load of other stuff spending on it and, you know, you didn't really know the history of it as such, it might well be a case of get rid of it and try again type thing. Maybe buy something a bit newer. But
yeah, she's done it for a few years, so she knows the car inside out.
Exactly, and she knows that's been serviced. She knows she's done the tyres,
yep.
Everything else. Even though it's, you know, 2007, it's getting on a bit, we told her to have it done, didn't we?
Mm.
And I think that was the right call.
She had a bit, you know, since that advice, and she agreed, yep, that's fine. She had another wobble.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Unsure about it again.
The other half was like, it's got to go. He's not a Land Rover fan at all. It's got to go. Because people just automatically think it's old. I mean, it's 18 years old, to think about it.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I still think of it as a fairly new car.
Yeah.
18 years old, he said, get rid of it, need a new one. I said, but the thing is, because she only wants another Freelander 2.
Yeah.
And you had to look on the classifieds, and they're fetching really strong money for a facelift late one.
Yeah, they do. They really help with money.
And they might still have similar problems. It still might need a clutch or a diff or something, you know?
The subframe rust is annoying, and it is what ends a lot of them. Because it goes sort of often where you can't see it. So the two sort of legs, if you like, of the rear subframe between the cradle for the diff and where they bolt on at the front, they rust on top. So you might not even see it from underneath. But by the time it's got bad enough, obviously they're unsafe to drive because there's movement.
This is the movement that's making the noise.
Yeah.
She noticed it. She'd been... She trains her dogs, gun dogs, basically. So she goes off piece with it. And she's been in a not a rutted farm track, but noticeable. But interestingly, 3 months since its MOT, and the MOT inspector did not pull up. So it's...
Yeah.
See what I mean? So just because something's got an MOT doesn't mean it's actually safe.
If you've got... And also, an MOT is only as good as the day it was MOT'd. Like...
Or they didn't notice.
Yeah. It's possible. But again, if it's a visual inspection, you don't go poking the top of it with your hand and things like that. But if you do have a Freelander 2 and it's, you know, no spring chicken, it is well worth checking your rear subframe, because once that rusts through and you get movement, you'll know about it, because one of your back wheels will be towing in and out all over the place.
Yeah, trust them.
But no, Euro subframes in Ireland sell the whole kit. So you get a brand new subframe, suspension arms, everything included. I think it even comes with new bolts, and it's...
What, about £400, I think
there's slightly more than that for the full kit.
But I think she was quite £700, including fitting, which I don't think was overly bad.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think her garage is like mate's weights.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But no, if... The only other caveat I'd say is if the rest of the body shell is clean, like if the sills aren't rotten and it hasn't gone, you know, when you open the back door and like the rust climbs up the inner arch, things like that. If the shell is knackered, I wouldn't bother. If it's clean everywhere else and it is just the subframe, I would do it.
Yeah, she just worried that, you know, 160,000 miles was cracking on, and is there something else looming? We don't know the answer to that,
do we?
No, we
never will.
It'll blow up tomorrow, but better the devil you know sometimes.
Do you know what I always find? Even like Freelander 1s as well, there's still so many Freelanders on the
road. Loads.
You see them all the time.
Yeah.
Freelander 1 and 2, mostly like facelift Freelander 1, but loads of Freelander 2s as well.
I think, well, yeah, I mean, early Freelander ones are now classic cars, aren't they, really?
Have you seen Nick Dimbleby's new one? It's got a Borrego yellow Kalahari. Really nice. Because they didn't do an official G4 edition. They did, like, the G4 colours on Freelander, but they badged them Kalahari. It's really, really smart. Borrego yellow suits them so well.
Okay. I might have done. I think I have.
That's a pre-facelift, but, yeah, gorgeous. Even, especially, like, when you black the trims, you know, like, they fade and go grey, don't they?
Yeah.
If you put the time in and make them black again, it just, the way it looks, that yellow is just beautiful. And I never thought I'd say that about Freelander, but they really have come into their own as sort of a cult classic.
Yeah, I've often, you look at the stuff and I've often thought, should I get one again?
One of the funnest projects I ever did, I think we've sort of spoken about it briefly on previous podcasts, was the turbo conversion I did on my old facelift one, 2004 3-door in Cairns Blue. And I basically yanked a Rover 75 engine out because they get a factory turbo one, and I stripped it all down, put the pistons in the Freelander and drilled the block for the oil return, and fantastic. So much fun to drive. Still about that car. But yeah, no, I think they're a cracking little thing, a great way into Land Rover ownership, and actually pretty well, as you know, loads of readers and listeners tell us, they're actually, you know, they are capable off-road if you protect them in the right places. Independent suspension, maybe a bit of a lift if you go in for like rocky green lanes or whatever. They're pretty impressive.
Yeah, and again, lots of spare parts at the spares days.
Yes, indeed. Yeah,
we're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specializes in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own, and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information, or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Shall we do a listener's question then?
We have had a few, haven't we?
We have. We're probably not going to cover them all in this podcast, but we'll get cracking. We'll get cracking on one, shall we?
Go on then.
Matthew Ewens gets in touch. He says, "Hi Martin and Steve. I'm a bit of a latecomer to your podcast, but have made up for it in the last few weeks listening from the beginning, and it's great fun." Cheers, Matthew. "It reminds me of the conversations I have with fellow enthusiasts and my local mechanic who's still driving his 200 TDI pickup 110, which is 1983, a really early one." Very nice.
Yeah, nice.
"Oh yeah, will that video be out yet? We won't allude to it. There might be a bit of early 110 action coming up soon on our YouTube channel."
Basically, go over to YouTube, subscribe, don't miss out, because that video is going to be awesome.
Yeah, it is. If it's not already.
Even I'll do say myself.
That was a fun one to do, wasn't it?
It was.
He says, "After drooling over Land Rover since I was a child, I moved further out into the countryside a couple of years ago, decided to just take the plunge. I've got no mechanical experience previously. My daily driver was a new Audi Q7 on PCP. I'm sorry to hear that. But one Christmas, I bought a 1987 90, which has Disco 1 200 TDI engine and gearbox fitted. I've spent many a weekend tinkering, including fitting a new YRM battery box, as the previous one was more holes than steel." We all know what that looked like.
Yeah.
Had some suspension work done at Gigglepin, who are up the road. Oh, yeah, cool. We know the guys at Gigglepin. Really enjoyed going out in the snow when no one else could and finding any excuse to drive her." I think that's really cool. Like, when you bond with a vehicle like that and you just want to get in and drive it at any time.
Have you ever been in an Audi Q7?
No.
I have been in one very recently. And great road car, but complete contrast to a Land Rover. So, hats off, because that's somewhat different.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Steve, because he goes on.
Oh, okay.
"After that, I decided to double down and sent the Q7 back to Audi and bought a 1999 Discovery 2, which was all original."
Okay.
So he's completely given up on modern car life and he's gone into a Disco 2.
Sorry, what year Discovery 2?
1999, so an early one.
Early, yeah, that's pretty...
He said, "Sadly, it had a disguised rotten rear chassis, which unfortunately a lot of them do. A lot of them are bodged up rather than fixed properly." He says, "The previous owner patched the bottom of the chassis rails, but not the sides, by the tank or the tops, and had used a lot of silicon and filler."
Nice.
What a bodge artist.
They bulge, don't they? But that's a telltale sign. Anything split. Freshly undersealed.
You've got to be suspicious. That's a real shame.
It is. Why aren't people fixing this properly?
I know. He said, I won't make that mistake again. I couldn't let her go, so I had new rear chassis welded in, and then shortly after, power steering work and an intercooler. And I love wafting around in it now, but it's a bit slow. Well, it would be compared to a Q7, I suppose. My wife also enjoys the comfort sometimes, but is equally is very encouraging when I show her new potential purchases. She sounds like a keeper.
Yeah.
Then last year, two wasn't enough, so I bought a 2012 Puma 90 as my daily driver and dog car. That's had some initial turbo, EGR and half shaft issues, but they were all dealt with under warranty. Happy days. I've loved and loathed in equal measure working on them at various stages, although not some of the bills when things are beyond my skills, like welding in the gearbox. Well, that's fair enough. You've got to appreciate where your own limitations are, I suppose.
But we all do.
I can't say I've spent less than my PCP payments, but I've had way more fun and I'm less nervous of damage or car parks. Yeah. I think it's about that.
It's a fun factor, isn't it? Like, you've got a car that people are interested in and want to talk to you. No one will talk to you if you have an Audi Q7.
No one's going to get excited about it.
No. I mean, it's a tool. It's a great car, but...
Yeah. Yes. A couple of little questions. He says, I've now got the hankering to swap the Disco 2 and the TDCi 90 for a 2015 110 to cover all the, to do the job of both. You have been in a similar situation.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Given the road tax money now involved in running two cars, that if he gets a 110 station wagon, he probably will be in the expensive tax bracket.
Possibly, but will it still be more expensive than two older ones?
Might be on a par, but you've got only one lot of insurance, not two.
Yeah, one lot of maintenance.
It'd be cheaper to have a 110 than have the other two. I'm in a similar thing. You know, I have that TD590, I say this nearly every podcast. I'm desperately not getting them distracted by any other Land Rover till the other one's built.
Well, it's the end of January and you haven't, so it's good going.
But not got distracted.
Not got distracted.
No.
Unlike me.
No, unlike you. Hashtag video coming out soon. Yeah.
What I would say is I actually disagree. I don't think you should swap them for the 2015 110 because then you'll suffer from the same car park and damage anxiety as you did when you had the Q7. Because the 2015 110 is always going to be mega desirable. It's like one of the last ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas you keep your Disco 2 for running around in and you've got your 90s for taking your dogs out in and things like that. Still a nice car on a 2012 plate, but not quite as... You wouldn't be maybe quite as precious about it as you would a 2015 110. See what I'm getting?
Yeah, no, I do get you. It's a nicer station wagon, does it say?
No, it doesn't say.
Because the problem also, when you've got a 110 as a daily, if it's a station wagon, they're really desirable to undesirable people.
Yeah.
And if you're out in the public, not many people will steal a Discovery 2.
No,
they're a very capable car, comfortable.
Absolutely. I mean, if like we said on the podcast we did with Ian Bourne, the security, you have to layer up the security on any Defender because they are just...
It's
sad, but that's a fact of life. So I say keep what you've got. What do you say? Are you going to replace it or are you going to keep it?
Depends how much space and money you've got.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Only you know, really.
Yeah, only you'll know by driving one, I think.
He goes on his last point. He says, also, one thing I can't seem to defeat is the condensation on the inside of the roof on the 1987 90. He says he's put a LaSalle fiberglass headliner in, but it still pours water on his head when he drives down the road.
Might not be coming in from condensation.
It might not be. But also, if it's a fiberglass headliner, it won't be absorbing any moisture, so it will still be condensing. If you put a layer of, like, trim, mar trim, I think, still do it, like self... It's not self-adhesive, but it's like foam-backed headliner material on.
You're not talking about eggshell type. Not eggshell. You know the egg box shaped
stuff. I used that with great success in the past, but if he's already got quite a nice-looking LaSalle trim headliner in, he's probably not going to want to put that over the top.
No, but what I've got in mine is this. It's called... Oh, Joe, what? It escapes me. What's that insulation, the sand insulation I've got?
Dodo mat.
Dodo mat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the foil backed mat.
Yeah.
But then there's the heatproof matting that you put over the top of that.
Okay.
So it's like a foam, like a really dense sort of foam.
Right.
And it's quite warm to the touch. That would get rid of condensation.
Okay. Interesting.
But it might not be condensation.
Yeah, yeah, you might
it,
have
it
a...
It comes the, in, you know, the rivets on the top.
Yeah, it comes in a number of places, doesn't it? It could be your corners between your windscreen frame and your roof panel. It could be the door seal itself. It could be the gap between the top of the windscreen frame and the roof.
And it sits in the... Yeah, I know.
Basically, don't spend loads and loads of money on a posh headliner. I would probably get a mate out there with a hose pipe and see if it's running in anywhere obvious first. But putting any sort of soft material on that fiberglass headliner will help, because it doesn't give the water a hard surface to cling to.
Yeah.
But
anyway, it's character building anyway, getting wet in it. Oh, that was like,
I agree. Apologies for the long email. Really enjoying the chat on your show, and also the comfort it gives to keep going, even when the bloody knuckles and bank balance suggest you should stop. We've all been there.
Could be worse, though. Could have a PCP payment on an Audi Q7.
You could be paying for a car you'll never own. So it could be a lot worse. There you go.
Yeah, to give it back, then what you're left with.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Attached images, some of the vehicles, one of my dogs. Yes, for the record, he's sent. You'll like this as well. He says, P.S., I know you like this program. I also bought an old Austin last year from just for fun from Bangers and Cash. I must be mad. I know you enjoy that program.
I love Bangers and Cash. The new episodes are out now Thursday night on Yesterday Channel on 8 p.m.
Hashtag not paid advertising.
Not paid advertising at all. But what a fantastic... I just love it. First, it's in the north, set in the North Yorkshire Moors.
Okay.
And it's just warm telly.
Makes you warm and fuzzy, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's just proper.
Like heartbeat. You're proper into your heartbeat at the moment, aren't you?
I said something that made people laugh the other day, right? I said, I've never wanted to be an actor, but I've always wanted to be a heartbeat.
It's because you're of that era.
Yeah, I'd love...
Wear a flat cap and drink flat beer with bits of wood floating in it.
Yeah, but enough about my weekends. What about... you know heartbeat, you know they often used to have as ones and stuff, didn't they? The docks used to run around and...
Yeah, they do. They had some cool cars in them. I love period like TV shows and dramas and things like that. Quite often, it's incredibly sad, but I'll wind my wife up because I'll say, hang on a minute, that car was never on a P-Reg when it was new. That's a pre-93 or whatever.
Yeah.
She'll roll her eyes and I'll be like, well, someone didn't do their research properly on that.
Yeah.
But talking of, there is no segue into this, but I had a right result the other day when I was at my mate's house. He's got a Disco 2, TD5. I went over to his house to help paint his workshop floor. And he said, that Disco needs a core plug. He's got a few other Land Rovers. He's got a Series 3 and he's got a L322, actually, that she uses for...
You haven't mentioned L322 for ages.
I haven't. That's because I've been distracted by other things, but I would still like one at some point. But he said, I've got this core plug. The core plug's in the back of the cylinder head, right?
Okay.
There's a small core plug. And I don't know if it had rusted out or whether it's just popped out the back of the head. But as you probably know, if you've ever looked under the bonnet of a Discovery 2, the engine is quite... There's a bit of a gap between the engine and the bulkhead, but they're not like... There's not tons of room to work. So he'd sort of not given up, but he was like, oh, I'm probably going to have to take the cylinder head off and I can't be bothered and I've got too much else on. So I said, let's have a look. And I went over, opened the bonnet, and he bought like a generic core plug set off eBay.
Okay.
And I looked through them all and I sorted them all out. And I was like, I looked at the one that should be in the back of the head and I put it up to the back of the head. I thought, that doesn't feel right. Took it back out, got a pair of vernier calipers, measured the hole in the head, measured the core plug, and it was way oversized. There was no way that was going to go in. And I said, well, that's your first problem. So luckily his dad was there. He ran off to Mansfield 4x4 at Bury St Edmunds. Picked up a genuine one.
Wow, that's a blast from the past, that name.
It's a great place, yeah. Mansfield, yeah, and lovely people there. I've not been over there a long while. We used to do the odd workshop feature there.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that. I remember them. It used to be in the mags, didn't they?
Yeah, nice people. Anyway, they had one in stock. This was a Saturday, so you had to hot foot it over
there.
Yeah,
they're normally shut by 12, aren't they, these parts counters?
A lot of them shut like midday or early afternoon, don't they? Bought a genuine one. I had one in stock.
How much was a genuine core plug?
Like £5, I think.
Okay, not too bad.
But he'd paid like 25 for the generic kit off eBay, and none of them fit. Yeah, okay. So anyway, came back with it and measured that, measured the hole, a lot closer, well within. You know, a core plug's got to compress a little bit. It's an interference fit in the hole.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you've got to put them in dead square, haven't you?
Yes. This is the next... Just to bring in what Speedy doesn't know what a core plug is, it's essentially a small metal plug that goes in various points on the engine, normally in the engine block, but this has one in the cylinder head as well. And it's used for engine assembly. When they put the engines together, the machines go in through the cores, and also... if you run water or weak antifreeze, the idea is that if it freezes, it pushes the core plugs out rather than...
It's like a weak spot to stop pressure building up.
Rather than cracking the steel.
That's what I always thought it was, yeah.
Yeah, and they can corrode, they can fall out under pressure or whatever, but anyway. And we were sort of like scratching our heads, and we had sort of different ideas about lever bars. We were going to maybe put a socket in the core plug and try and... Like one of us would hold it and someone would try and apply pressure with a lever bar, and you couldn't get a hammer in there to tap it in. And we're sort of determined. You know when you get like in that mindset where you won't be beaten by a problem? It just becomes like...
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, I know I have. Every month in the mag, really. It will not be beaten. This will get suppressed on time.
Yeah, and it does, yeah, every time. But eventually, I thought... He'd had a go, you know, like a brake caliper windback tool where you pushes the piston back into the caliper. He'd sort of used that theory, if you like, to sort of create a tool, but it didn't really fit that well and it was all a bit wobbly. I ended up getting a long impact socket, it was a coach bolt with a round head and a couple of nuts, and I put the coach bolt into the socket. A few washers and nuts later, I'd made myself like a pusher.
Right.
You know, like we used to...
The opposite of a puller.
Yeah, you know, like...
And
things like that. You just used two different sockets
and
used the nuts to wind the thread. So I wedged the socket up against the bulkhead, got the core plug on the end, and it took a long time because you're only working at like quarter of a turn of the nut at once, just ever so, like, gradually... pushed the core plug into the back of the head, and it worked flawlessly.
Had the other one completely come out?
It was gone. It had gone AWOL.
So it wasn't like it had corroded and you still need to tap the other one out?
No, no.
That could be a problem.
It was completely just missing. I don't know under what circumstances it had fallen out, but it was nowhere to be found. But yeah, that was my win for that Saturday morning. I was very, very pleased with myself.
You could market that tool, couldn't you? You could just make it.
I mean, it was far from a professional outfit, but...
Is there a tool for that job? Put the head off, I suppose.
Like I say, my friend's dad spoke to them at Mansfield when he was there, and he said people have managed to fit them with a socket and I guess some sort of possibly a similar contraption or a sort of arrangement of bars maybe to get enough leverage to push it in, but they're a tight, tight fit, obviously, because they've got a hole in
them. Yeah.
But yeah, I was pleased with that. I topped it up, got it up to temperature.
I suppose they, in time, corrode in, don't they, and create more of a seal, do they?
Yeah, they can do. The main problem is when people run any engine, this applies to anything really, without enough antifreeze in it, so you just run water.
Oh, gross.
And you get corrosion all through the system, and the core plugs are one of the first things to suffer. And then, yeah, they just go weak, and then they start, they either weep or leak, or they get pushed out completely because they're weakened.
That's often right. So if someone's got a coolant leak, most people top their coolant up with just water.
Yes.
They've weakened their coolant.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good top tip there. Check your coolant, but you can get a tool for that, can't you?
You can. You get a refractometer, which shows you to which temperature the coolant is good.
And you look through the eyeglass, don't you, to see it?
That's it, yeah. You can get a couple of different types.
We did it on mine, didn't we?
Yes.
People often just top it up with water. They keep topping up.
Which is, it's okay to top them up a little bit, but if you're constantly putting like a litre in every month or
1,000 miles or something,
then it's going to soon just be water, and that's when you have big trouble. But I wasn't really going anywhere with that story. I just wanted to share a little bit.
You just wanted to make yourself look good.
Do you know what else I had?
If you want your Land Rover fixed, come round to my
I don't, because I've got no time.
No.
Another good victory was, you know, the manifolds that I had on the V8 when we did the chassis swap and the studs all broke off.
Oh, I saw that.
I had a very, very therapeutic couple of hours in the garage getting rid of all the old studs and fitting new ones.
So now you have spares.
I've got spares, yeah.
So I'm at the spares day.
I could do. I might keep them, though.
Just in case.
Maybe. Never know, do you? I don't think they're particularly easy to get hold of, either, those early carb manifolds, Range Rover Classic carb manifolds. So I might kick myself if I do let them go. But we'll see.
You sound like you're at the start of being a hoarder.
I can't be a hoarder. I don't have the space for it or the patience. But, yeah, I don't know. It's all good fun.
Anyway, right, I reckon we should do Product of the Week.
Product of the Week.
Stop. We're going to do some more listeners' questions next time.
Yeah, we'll do some more next time, I think. Shall we? Let's break from the norm and kick off with Product of the Week rather than Feature of the Week, shall we?
Yeah, I know why. Because you haven't got a product Feature of the Week lined up.
How dare you? Right, well, actually, Steve, something that I'm feeling a little bit dry in the mouth. So a collapsible kettle would do us well right now for making a nice cup of tea. And Outwell have just started selling them.
Oh, right, okay.
So if you're a bit short on space or you've got a dedicated box that you take out camping, green laning, whatever, this kettle might be just the ticket for you because it holds 2.5 litres of liquid, which is just about enough to keep us going for a couple of hours when we're on the tea or coffee. And it collapses down to a much shorter height when not in use. So you can like store it in a box with all your other gear and it doesn't take up tons of room.
And it's a kettle, but is it goes on a stove, yeah? Or is it plug-in?
Yeah, no, it goes on a jet boil or a camping stove or whatever. It's made of stainless steel and silicon, and it has a wide base for stability and quick and even heating. So obviously, more surface area, the water gets hotter quicker.
Yeah.
You've got a delicious cup of tea in your hand faster.
And how much for that?
That comes in at £52.99. So not cheapest, but if you're going to buy a kettle, you might as well have a collapsible one because it's convenient and easy to store.
There you go. Heard it here first.
There you go. So we roll seamlessly into Feature of the Week. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Good. This week's Feature of the Week is actually in the Land Rover Life section of Land Rover Monthly, which we obviously now welcome into the fold of the LRM pages. And it's about Land Rovers in rural India.
Yeah. I'd like to go to India. I've never been.
I've never been either. I haven't really travelled much, but I would like to go to India to experience it.
I think
it
would be good.
So this feature was done by a gent called Shail Desai, who lives out there. And it's about how Land Rovers have sort of become they've got like a cult following. They're sort of ingrained in rural Indian culture. They were sort of left over there from, you know, doing various jobs to where they've now been bought up by locals, having finished their working lives, if you see what I mean. And they're really, really coveted.
Okay.
The account, it's the first person account of a gentleman that he runs into. And this series one is really, really cool. And it's like his absolute pride and joy. And he gets, you know, lots of adoration and respect from people who you know, love Land Rovers. And there's plenty of them over in India. And he's basically running errands and cleaning it up for a wedding. And it's a really, really cool thing. And it's funny you should mention about parts and hoarding, because this guy, obviously over there, they aren't blessed with the parts supply that we have here. You can't click a button and have something delivered to your door the next day. So he's basically stockpiling as many spare parts as he can in his basement. For the record, I'm showing Steve a picture.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot more to the story than I've just outlined, but be sure to check that out in the March issue of Land Rover Monthly, which is on sale now.
Cool.
As well as tons of other great Land Rover
products. Well, that's a very good issue, I have to say.
I'm very pleased with it. People seem to like it at Malvern. We had it on display, not long been on sale, but it was very well received.
Definitely.
So, grab it in shops or sign up for a subscription. Save a bit of money, get it delivered to your door. What's not to like?
Good stuff. I've got things to say.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could do with a cup of my throat's
like,
getting dry.
Talking about cups of tea, and I was thinking, yeah, now's a good time.
That is the only thing with the events at the weekend is because obviously you talk a lot. I mean, you talk a lot anyway, but you talk a lot more at events.
You talk more in the podcast than I do, but in real life,
It's definitely the other way around in real life. Yeah.
Funny, isn't it? Yeah.
But yeah, my throat is a bit sore. I am due a cup of tea. So I think we'll probably park this one for the week, shall we?
Yes. And good news.
Good news.
Got some guests coming up.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
So we'll leave that as an element of surprise for a very, very near future.
I think I already alluded to a couple of them. But yeah, no, it's
good. Have you?
Yeah.
What, today?
No, in last week's.
Oh, did you?
But
okay.
Stay tuned because it's going to be a great year. We're going to get out and about in the Land Rover universe and see what's happening all over the place. We cannot wait. It's going to be a good one.
Definitely. Look forward to it.
And sorry, I have to do this bit, but please follow us on our social media. Subscribe on our YouTube channel, Land Rover Monthly. Sign up for our newsletters because we have regular newsletters with all the latest that's going on in the Land Rover scene.
All the latest products and accessories
yep.
go out on email.
So events.
Events. Ticket offers, subscription offers.
Yep.
Anything that we think you might actually like to make your hobby that little bit better.
It costs you nothing, so you might as well.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And if you want to follow, before we go,
go on.
If you want to follow ourselves on Instagram, you can. I'm Steve_Miller_automotive.
And I'm Land Rover Martin with underscores as well. Yeah.
Job done.
Give us a follow. See what nonsense we're up to.
Yeah. I need to add more nonsense to my page, really.
Yeah. My throat's definitely hurting now. I think we need a cup of tea.
Let's go.
Cool. See you next week.
Bye for now.